Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum. Celebrate the opening of I Saw It, Francisco de Goya Printmaker, with an evening of live music, art making, live model drawing, tours, and more. Saturday, April 20th from 4 to 6:30 p.m. Info at nortonsimon.org.
What we learned investigating the death of Chicano student activist Oscar Gomez.
It sounds like you ran almost every theory to its end.
Binge all 8 episodes of Imperfect Paradise, The Forgotten Revolutionary, wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Such pleasure to have you with us on this warm Southern California day. Later this hour, we'll take a look at the FDA moving closer to an announced ban on menthol cigarettes, as well as flavoring in other forms of tobacco. We'll hear the pros and cons of that proposed ban, but right now we talk about President Biden's address last night before a joint session of Congress. It was, of course, a distanced and much smaller congressional gathering than what we would typically see in a State of the Union address that's not in a pandemic. So this was visually very, very different, but the format quite similar, with the president spending more than an hour in outlining his major legislative plans, including the $1.8 trillion American Families Plan. The president said 12 years is no longer enough to compete in the 21st century.
That's why my American Families Plan guarantees 4 additional years of public education for every person in America, starting as early as we can. The great universities in this country have conducted studies over the last 10 years. It shows that adding 2 years of universal high-quality preschool for every 3-year-old and 4-year-old, no matter what background they come from, puts them in the position to be able to compete all the way through 12 years and increases exponentially their prospect of graduating and going on beyond graduation. Research shows when a young child goes to school, not daycare, they're far more likely to graduate from high school and go to college or something after high school. When you add 2 years of free community college on top of that, you begin to change the dynamic.
Joining us to talk about that and other provisions in the American Families Plan is Anita Kumar, White House correspondent and associate editor of Politico. Anita, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, it's kind of a strange setting last night, wasn't it, because of the distancing and masking?
Yeah, you heard members of Congress calling it weird. They told my colleagues there that that's how they would describe it. There's about 200 people in the chamber, and they generally have about 1,400. So as you can imagine, that was really different. The members of Congress were spaced out. You know, we saw the First Lady there, but she didn't have the traditional guests around her that she normally has. It really did feel, you know, quite different because we didn't see some of the, you know, members of the cabinet and the Supreme Court justices and others there.
So a number of provisions in the American Families Plan. We just heard about the 4 additional years of education on the front end and the back end, direct support to children and families for child care. In some cases, it would be free. In other cases, it would be heavily subsidized. Tax cuts for families with children and a number of other provisions like family leave that are included in this $1.8 trillion. And Anita, at the same time, we've got, you know, the economic news that's out that the economy seems to be coming out of the pandemic doldrums with a growth rate of more than 6% annualized based on the last quarter. How does that potentially factor into the president's plan?
Well, you know, a lot of people talk about these plans that he's proposed, these two, I call them two parts of one plan, you know, American Families Plan and the American Jobs Plan, as sort of getting the country out of COVID. But as you indicated, you know, places are already starting to open up again. The economy is lifting. What President Biden is talking about is sort of the next step. It's really not about the pandemic so much as these are things he feels like the country needs that go way beyond that. This would be a generational change in how things are done. And it wasn't lost on me that he must have uttered the word jobs about 36 times last night in his speech. That's really what he's focused on. I mean, he talked about, climate change and technology and other things that factored in, but it was all about jobs and putting, America in a whole different, going to a whole different level.
And not just jobs, but union jobs, because he made that a very explicit point, also touting the legislation that would potentially make it easier to unionize businesses. So he was very explicit about that. And of course, unions are a huge part of the Democratic constituency.
Yeah, that's right. And that's something that he's talked about. As someone who's coming from Pennsylvania, where union jobs are so important, he actually in the speech made reference to, it's not the wealthy Americans, it's not the corporations that built this country. It was these working class, middle class folks. So he did make that reference. And it's something he talks a lot about in most of his speeches.
And of course, the flip side of this is the tax increases that would pay for it on capital gains, as well as high income earning Americans to pay for this. It appears that the polling, at least early on in the first days of this being introduced, is favorable to the president.
Yeah, and that's really what the White House is stressing, is that you may hear Republicans on Capitol Hill grumble and complain, but that across the country, when you look at Americans and how they are talking about this in the polls, they favor this. Not only that, but they're saying, look, it is bipartisan. Republicans across the country support it. Local mayors and maybe governors support this. It's just maybe not members of Congress. So that's how they're trying to really spin this and talk about it as a way that it is bipartisan. But you're right. There is Republicans in Congress have many things that they oppose, but they oppose the price tag and they oppose what's in it, but they also oppose how it's paid for.
We're talking with Anita Kumar of Politico, White House correspondent and associate editor, joining us on Air Talk. And I'd like to hear from you the proposal that you heard from the president last night in his speech. What aspects of it did you like? What aspects bring you concern? You can weigh in with your thoughts about it here at 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722. The AirTalk page, kpcc.org. You can tweet at AirTalk, post on the AirTalk Facebook page as well. Anita, I was also struck by how, the president was very forthright about this being the biggest spending plan, essentially, this kind of what he calls an investment since World War II. And he's not shying away from that.
Yeah, it was interesting. He's not worried about how it's perceived. He supports it. He's confident in it. And he's putting it out there. I was actually struck overall at how much he didn't talk about working with Republicans. Now, he did talk about it. I'm not saying that he didn't. But, I went back through the speech again and really looked at that. And some of the moments he talked about bipartisanship were things that, they are bipartisan. Curing cancer, it's bipartisan. But when he talked about this, he said, look, I want to work with you. He praised Republicans for coming up with their own alternative proposal. But then he was very, very clear and said, we need to get this done. And, basically said he's not going to wait forever. If they can't come up with something, they can't compromise. He hopes that they can, but that he thinks it's important to move on and get this done.
Joe Biden ran as a moderate, and it seems like with his just out of the gate first 100 days initiatives, this is a very progressive agenda. And I know it doesn't go as far as many progressives would ultimately like, but even they have to be somewhat surprised by how assertive he's been on the degree of spending and program rollouts early on.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's a progressive agenda. There's this perception of Joe Biden with all his many decades in public life, that he is a moderate, that he's someone that works with Republicans. He really leaned into that on the campaign trail. But yes, this is very progressive. He gave, you know, I would call what he did in his speech sort of a Democratic wish list for our times, for the times right now. You know, this was this is different than when Barack Obama was president, that because that was many years ago now. You know, it's a wish list that a lot of Democrats wanted and progressives wanted. He, beyond these spending plans, he really went through a litany of things that activists had been wanting to hear from him, but maybe hadn't heard as much as they wanted. So, for example, he talked about police reform and immigration and firearms restrictions and voting rights. Those are things that he has said he supported, but putting all of them out there, putting it all together, it really was what a lot of Democrats wanted to hear.
Now, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott gave the Republican rebuttal, and it was interesting on the criminal justice and policing issues. He said he himself had been a victim of racial profiling and said that there needed to be police reforms and that he had put out his own measures only to have them be filibustered and not be really given a hearing in the Senate. And he framed that as Democrats essentially keeping this as a live issue, as opposed to really trying to solve the problem. And I didn't see a Democratic response to that, but I was just curious, Anita, I thought that was interesting that, you know, Scott weighed right into that issue as an African-American office holder.
Yeah, as a Black Republican and the only Black Republican in the Senate, you know, he has a different, unique perspective, and he really leaned into that. And basically, the message sounded like to me is he was saying, look, if you're a Black Democrat, you can say certain things, but if you're a Black Republican, you can't. And he said that before, but it was really interesting in this moment to hear that because, you know, right after the trial, the first trial, I should say, into the killing of George Floyd, we'll have another one. This is all the talk in Washington right now is, can Congress get police reform? Can they finally get it done? And, you know, it was interesting because his comments were so partisan on that issue. And yet right now, currently, he is working with Democrats to try to come up with a bill. It's actually something that they think they might be able to agree on. So I think there were some people that were surprised that that piece of it was so partisan when he's actually working on a bill right now or working on a compromise right now, and they hope to get it done. In fact, today they even had a meeting about it. So it was an interesting message coming at an interesting time.
Also, Senator Scott, in his rebuttal to the president's address, hit a theme that has been very consistent from Republicans. Their anger about schools, public schools, being closed in so many places as long as they were.
Most of all, I'm saddened that millions of kids have lost a year of learning when they could not afford to lose a single day. Locking vulnerable kids out of the classroom is locking adults out of their future. Our public schools should have reopened months ago. Other countries did. Private and religious schools did. Science has shown for months that schools are safe. But too often, powerful grown-ups set science aside, and kids like me were left behind.
They didn't explicitly say it, but I think it's fair to say, Anita, that there's a reference to teachers' union that's embedded in that, if not said overtly.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the message wasn't surprising because when you talk to Republicans who are involved already in the midterm elections for next year, they feel like both on their internal polling and what they're hearing on the ground that there are really two issues that President Biden is really vulnerable on, at least at this point. And one is that schools haven't fully opened, you know, and there's some debate about what do we call schools? Are they just elementary? Are they high school? You know, are they one day a week or 5 days a week? But that is something that you're going to hear Republicans continue to talk about. And of course, the other issue that they feel the president's very vulnerable on is the border. And you didn't hear President Biden talk very much about that at all. He talked about immigration as a whole, but didn't really go into, you know, the problems that his administration is having on the border. And so those are the sort of the two top political issues that Republicans feel like they have they have the upper hand on politically right now.
Yeah, and I was a little surprised that he didn't, at least spend a little more time on what's happening at the border. But Anita, thank you as always. So appreciate your being with us and talking about the president's address last night.
Thanks for having me.
Anita Kumar, White House correspondent, associate editor for Politico. Also with us from Pepperdine School of Public Policy, professor at Pepperdine, senior fellow there, Elizabeth Spaulding. Elizabeth, so good to have you with us again on Air Talk. Your thoughts just very generally first on the president's address.
A pleasure to be with you, Larry. Thank you. I thought that he did very well. President Biden came out and was strong in, as Anita just talked about, very odd circumstances. We hope that'll be the only time that a new president has to give an address like that under that kind of conditions. The general impressions, I think, are that Joe Biden has decided that he wants to be the FDR of our time. The president under which he served, Barack Obama, wanted to be the liberal or more progressive version of Reagan, and that's not the case for Biden. He's going back to FDR. And so as a result, he needs to have a systemic crisis along the lines of the Great Depression, and he is deciding to, and I think he did this in the speech over and over again, present basically everything on the home front as a crisis, especially with coronavirus. And then he's acting like he has a mandate, which, of course, FDR did, especially in his first two elections. But he's acting like he is FDR, too, when instead it's really still a largely divided country. He has a slim majority in both the House and then, of course, in the Senate. It's tied. The only way he can get a majority is with the vice president's help. So the question here is, why is he doubling down rather than reaching across the aisle?
Elizabeth, the opinion polls that I've seen show that there is majority support for his plans. And we know that, you know, such as with the Affordable Care Act, when people get some sort of a financial benefit from the government, you know, even Republicans often end up liking that. And so doesn't that play to his advantage to get something as sweeping as this potentially enacted, at least in part?
It could. And Joe Biden is famous for living by his gut, for looking at politics that way, you know, strong Democrat, very proud of it. But he goes with his feelings, with his gut. So he may be reading the American public accurately. But also, if you start looking at some of those polls, it's a little bit more layered in terms of more Americans still prefer smaller government over larger government. It's a smaller percentage that it wins by, but it's I think one of the polls I saw from the Washington Post ABC was 48% to 45%. And so really what that's pointing to is we are at a moment here where America should have a conversation about the size of government, the scope of government, the purpose of government, and where we'll go. And President Biden has already decided that the majority that has always preferred smaller government over larger government for many, many years now is waning. It'll stop at some point, and he'll be right there with his plans. And on the plans point, I think you're correct that a lot of times people like pieces of the plans. But right now, the American Families Plan is a proposal, And we have to see what happens when it's hammered out in legislation.
We'll continue. That's Elizabeth Spalding, senior fellow at the Pepperdine University School of Public Policy. Coming up, we'll talk with University of Redlands political scientist, Professor Renee Van Vechten, get her perspective on the president's congressional address last night, which you heard right here on KPCC. We're back in just 1 minute. Later this hour on Air Talk, flavoring in tobacco products. The biggest example of that, menthol in cigarettes, where 85% of African-American smokers choose menthol, and that could be going away if the FDA has its way. We'll talk about that later this hour. Right now, though, it's President Biden's address before the joint session of Congress last night, what essentially was a State of the Union address, though it didn't meet the constitutional format for that. It was very similar in the way in which the address was presented, except because of the distancing and masking from COVID-19. But the president, as is typical in an address like this, laying out a very ambitious plan, two parts, as we were talking earlier. One, the infrastructure, which Republicans say is actually a minority real infrastructure, the rest, as they call it, a Democratic wish list, and then the American Families Plan that he unveiled last night with funding for education, child care, health care, and a number of other areas of social funding. With us, Renee Van Vechten, professor of political science at the University of Redlands. Professor, very good to have you with us again.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, one of the things that was very clear, I mean, the president said trickle-down economics doesn't work, and I'm paraphrasing, essentially plans like this, which invest in childcare, additional years of education, that is really what's going to more than pay for itself, going to bear economic fruit. And what did you think of first of all, how the president sold that message, and do you think there's going to be enough public support to get the plan implemented?
Well, those are two very different questions, right?
It
has to do with who his audience was. On the one hand, he's trying to capture a new Democratic constituency. He's trying to bring in those who might have been alienated in the past, the blue-collar union workers who didn't feel that they were being addressed in the last, in the Obama administration, perhaps, and maybe even by, they didn't feel like they were being appealed to directly by Hillary Clinton and maybe have voted for Trump in the meantime. And at the same time, he was also speaking to new Democratic constituencies, or at least some the people of color, transgender, LGBTQ. I mean, he called out lots of different subgroupings and, you know, sort of here, we're the big tent party was one of his messages. And as he's approaching that, he's trying to reorient the message to one of, we really are about the people, right, as we define it. And it's, as he said, it's time to grow the economy from the bottom and the middle out. So the last 4 years really were quite the opposite, right? It was about giving tax cuts to the wealthiest and hoping and imagining that all of that largesse would, in fact, bring everyone up. What, of course, we saw was a bigger gap in the wealth. There's a bigger wealth gap today that is growing sharply. The middle class is not gaining as much or as quickly as those who are in the uppermost tiers, for example. And those who are at the very bottom haven't come up very much. So this is really about reorienting government itself to the sort of traditional Democratic vision, which is government is here to do these big things. And Biden himself actually said that at the beginning of his speech last night. He said, this is what government does, right? No one else can do these big, giant plans except for government.
We're talking with Professor Renee Van Vechten, University of Redlands, and Senior Fellow at Pepperdine University School of Public Policy, Elizabeth Spaulding. Again, your comments about the President's address before Congress. We'll take them at 866-893-KPECC. Stephen and Marina Del Rey said, I was extremely enthused by the speech. I'm not out on the street hearing other people's thoughts, but I can say that we're really struggling. That being said, I feel like calling it progressive isn't the correct characterization. We're behind a lot of developing countries. We're at 866-893-KPCC. George in Pasadena said the president talked a lot about jobs, but will they pay enough, particularly in solar and green technology? Elizabeth Spaulding of Pepperdine, the president, as Anita Kumar of Politico was saying, hit that theme again and again on jobs, 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 that this is what was going to be necessary for a conversion in the U.S. economy to take place. And is that likely to resonate with workers who have seen their comparative income decline?
I think it will resonate with many Americans, not just people who lost their jobs during the pandemic and others who are struggling. And so that is the reason why Joe Biden kept emphasizing that. He is saying, as both Renee and Anita said, but Biden saying this is the moment to massively restructure not just the government and the economy, but also, as Biden has said, really the soul of the country. That's what he sees this moment as. The question is it actually that moment? And then what kind of government do we have? And you know, Americans want jobs, and they want the we hope, temporary crisis that was created by the pandemic to be over with. And a lot of the economic signs point to it is. We're coming out. We're poised to be, as a country, much better in terms of our recovery even than most of the other countries still in the world. We're still at, you know, almost a quarter of the world's economy. But what does that mean then? It means that Americans want the jobs, but they also want President Biden to win support from Republicans and to work with them. And he wasn't talking about that last night. The way he was talking about unity was, you know, agree with me. And I'm not sure what'll happen there, because Americans are still worried, and this is coming out in polling, that President Biden would end up doing too much to increase the size and role of government in U.S. society.
Elizabeth Spaulding, is there enough crossover in the desires of Republicans with what Democrats want to find that common ground?
Right. That's the question. And it could be that with the child tax credits and other provisions in the American Families Plan, that could come to pass. But really what you're pointing to is Republicans are not going to want one huge plan like this to go with the other huge plan, because what we're talking about is on top of the regular budget of many trillions, which, you know, a new president inherits an existing budget. So he has that. And then the COVID relief plan that was already passed, and then the infrastructure plan, which is under consideration, and now this new American Families Plan proposal, that's about $2 trillion, not million, not billion, trillion, T, $2 trillion, if you do some rounding, you add that to the budget, you're up over $10 trillion. And Republicans will just keep talking about that over and over. Is that really the answer right now?
Yeah, and I just wonder, Renee Van Vechten, does that message about the size of federal spending and the potential risk that poses to the economy of the future, does that connect with Americans?
Well, these are blockbuster bills, absolutely. But you also have to realize that there is what we call a sort of cognitive limitation that people have, which is it's innumeracy. People don't really comprehend the depth of that number, right? They hear 1.9 and they hear 2.3 trillion, But really putting that in perspective takes a little bit of work, of intellectual work, to realize how big those numbers are. So I don't actually think that too many people at the get-go are going to say, oh, those are too big. Of course, it sounds big, and we know it's big. But in the relative scheme of things, I don't think that in the moment that's going to be the biggest consideration. Of course, down the line, and when you add it all up and you put it into the already explosive $28 trillion debt that we already have, I mean, these are just absolutely explosive numbers. But it doesn't mean that people won't be accepting of them simply because they're large.
I guess I'm a little surprised, maybe this is based on polling, that Republicans don't explain this a bit more and what's involved with taking on that degree of debt, what that means. It seems like the focus is very much on size of government and government intrusion into individual Americans' lives. It's sort of characterized that way. Mm-hmm. And it's as though they figured that the American people can't make their way through an understanding of the potential risk in the size economically of the plans. I don't know whose line just went out on that one. Renee, are you there?
Oh, I'm here.
Yeah, go right ahead. Okay.
Right. These numbers are abstractions. And if your freedom is being somehow limited, you feel that. If you are getting a check in your bank account, you see that, and those are real dollars. I think when you get into these astronomically huge numbers that we have, $1.8 trillion, they don't really mean a lot to the average American. But you're right. Republicans are going to try to hold the Democrats' feet to the fire with this, but they're not going to have a great chance of holding them in check if Democrats use the reconciliation process to get them passed.
All right. I want to thank you both so much for being with us. Norberto tweets at AirTalk, nothing about Biden's speech was progressive. Moderate is what it is. He's been all talk and blames Republicans just like Obama. I would say his actions say otherwise, but I've seen no action that's progressive. That's Norberto tweeting at AirTalk. My thanks to Renee Van Vechten of University of Redlands, where she's professor of political science, and from the Pepperdine School of Public Policy, senior fellow Elizabeth Spaulding. It's Air Talk on KPCC. In 90 seconds, we're going to talk about the FDA vowing again to ban menthol flavoring in cigarettes, as well as other flavoring in cigarettes and cigars. About 85% of African Americans choose menthol cigarettes, who are smokers, I should say, 85% of smokers. Very popular with black smokers. We're going to talk about what it would mean to ban it. We'll come back in 90 seconds.
Support comes from Ciclavia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclavia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. Free and open to all, Ciclavia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.